that very strong prima facie case of obviousness.
And they entirely have the burden on commercial success? In other words, you raise the question, yes, there's commercial success, there's no dispute about it, but then the question is, to what extent that commercial success is attributable to the length? And that's clearly their burden in your view?
That's absolutely correct, because as this court stated in Ray Huang, we don't have the ability to go out and gather evidence to refute their evidence of commercial success. So we rely on them to provide us the evidence, and so we have to look at the totality of the record that's provided to us to establish whether or not there's commercial success. And in this case,
in the Ormco case, we said that if the product that is the subject of the commercial success is coextensive with the scope of the claim, that creates a presumption of nexus.
That's correct, but in that case,
here we have a product that is alleged to have been commercially successful, and that product is coextensive with the claim. Would you agree?
The board did find that, but in the Armco case,
if that's true, then, and I'll let you answer in a minute. If that's true, then that would, according to Armco, create a presumption, correct? That then the patent office would have to overcome?
If that in a litigation, an inter-parties litigation, that would create a presumption, but not in an ex parte examination context.
So your argument that the presumption in Ormco doesn't apply in an ex parte context?
That's correct.
Have we ever held that explicitly?
I don't believe you've explicitly held that, but I think the holding in Huang would support that.
Why should it not apply in the context of the patent office proceeding?
Because we don't have the capability of going out and finding additional evidence to refute or rebut the information that's given to us during the examination process. So we have to rely solely on the evidence that's in the record.
Right, but the refute or rebut, I mean, I've seen a lot of infringement cases, and they never refute or rebut it with other sales evidence. It's always refuting or rebutting with, well, the advertisement doesn't tout these advantages, they tout those, the very things the board had in front of it. So I'm not following why what you do in the case of assessing commercial success is any different than what litigants would do in a private litigation.
Well, because then we wouldn't have the ability to go out and get surveys or additional information.
I've never seen a survey in an obviousness case. 5 years, 4 months on the bench. So I don't see what is different between what the PTO, I don't see why Armco shouldn't apply to the PTO.
I think the difference is the underlying forum in which the decision is being made. One is being made in an adversarial inter partes litigation where there's full discovery, and the other is being done ex parte before the patent office.
Yeah, but ex parte before the patent office, you all have the burden. Do they have to establish validity, or do you have to, in order to reject them by preponderance of the evidence, establish that the patent is not, the claim is not entitled to a patent? Who has the burden in an examination? Who has the burden of persuasion?
The applicant has the burden of persuasion.
So they have to establish that their claim is patentable, or you have to establish in order to reject it that it's not?
Doesn't this statute say a person is entitled to a patent unless?
I actually think
this
the PTO
is
like,
it's 102 and 103. I think that.
Okay, I may have misunderstood.
An applicant is entitled to a patent unless.
I'm sorry. I think I may have misunderstood your question. Yes, the Patent Office has the burden of putting forward evidence and prior art to show that
to make a prima facie
case of obviousness or unpatentability
to support a rejection.
That's correct.
So if the patent office has the burden of persuasion, it has the burden of persuasion at all times. We're only talking about switching the burden of production back and forth. And you've met your case with prima facie evidence, then they have the burden of production of coming forward with something to rebut it. But if you have the burden of persuasion at all times, why shouldn't ARMCO equally apply to you? It seems that that presumption should have favored them in this case.
Well, in this case, we've already established a strong prima facie case of obviousness.
Yeah, but I don't buy into the notion that a strong prima facie case of obviousness is a get-out-of-jail-free card with regard to secondary considerations. And I don't think Leapfrog stands for that proposition. I think Leapfrog very carefully says in this case, the strong prima facie case of obviousness, we didn't need to overcome. And that was after the court considered the secondary consideration evidence and discussed it. So I don't see any of our cases sort of giving a free pass. This is a strong prima facie case. You don't even have to consider the secondary considerations. In fact, I know I personally have been involved in multiple cases where we reverse district court judges for unfortunately making that mistake and saying, I don't even have to look at them.
Right, and I'm not saying that the PTO doesn't have to look at secondary consideration cases when there's a strong prima facie case. The record shows in this case that the board did review all of the evidence in the record regarding to commercial success and secondary considerations, and they did the proper weighing, and they weighted against the disclosure of Peters and found that Peters was a strong prima facie case. There's only a minimal difference between the two, and that based on that and based on the problems with the commercial success evidence submitted by Saunders, that it strongly weighed in favor of finding the claims unpatentable as being obvious. And again, I think this goes back to Judge Lynn's point that Saunders did not provide any evidence to the Patent Office that showed that the commercial success was because the grooves extended the full length of on the surface of the charcoal briquette.
I'm wondering if that's their obligation when they are actually showing that the product is identical to the claim and
but
being commercially successful.
They still have to show a nexus to something that did not exist in the prior art. So the nexus has to be something novel. And here, Peters discloses that there are grooves on the surface of the charcoal briquette. And I think the only difference is whether or not those grooves extended from one periphery to the other. And so in order to show a nexus, they have to tie that to the part of their invention that was not known in the prior art. And in this case, that the only difference is the extension of these grooves from on the surface of the charcoal briquette to the edge of the charcoal briquette.
What do you take away from Peters in terms of it saying that such attempts may